Musky pressure. Trolling headlocks. Musky pressure. I wanna tighten. Musky pressure. Working jerk baits. Musky pressure. 360 podcast.
All right, folks, welcome to the Musky 360 podcast. Anyway, we just got off the water here. It has been a crazy few days post the Musky Shop bash. Jay Bird is crashed out. Jim is running around like crazy. We've been filming episodes for Musky Shop TV. So we are going to air a portion of the Q&A segment we had at the Musky Shop bash. It's me, it's Joe Booker, it's Steve Herbeck, it's Smitty, Pete Maney, you got it. It's a little bit of the fun we had at the bash. Again, I want to take a second here on behalf of me and Jay and Jim Stewart. Thank everybody that came out to the Musky Shop bash. It was awesome. There are so many people we didn't get enough time to talk to. It's like if I talked to you for a few minutes or we were trying to talk, there's so much going on, and we really appreciate everybody that was there. But anyway, enjoy a little bit of the Q&A from the Musky Shop bash here, and we'll catch you with a fresh episode here in a few days. Later.
How do you become a professional fisherman?
How do you become a professional musky fisherman?
Joe, go. No. Joe Booker, that's all you, baby.
Find a girlfriend with a good job first.
Bingo! That is the answer of all answers, isn't it? Every time. Find a girlfriend with a good job. Or just live in the forest like Pete. The bills are low. Yeah. You know? Oh, goodness. What do you got, Jay? Somebody's got something here. Oh!
What you got?
When you're setting your drag for trolling, how tight do you normally go and kind of casting too?
Good question. Steve and I were just talking about that yesterday.
Yeah. Trolling, the thing for me is I set them way too hard, but I like it because I'm waiting for that. And it's so I know I've got the hook up. I don't know. Herbie, where do you set yours? I mean, like, I the other day, it will not make the video of me screaming at Jay to reverse the boat on this big fish because it's just like scorching.
Believe me, it will not be in the video.
Yeah, well, it was. It would be musky. Beep, 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 beep. Musky. Back up the boat, Jay.
I think it matters a little bit if you're using mono or braid. With braid, I like to actually have it slip a little smoother than what you would think for casting, for sure. But with mono, you know, especially with an 8 or 9 foot glass trolling rod, you got a lot of stretch, and you can, you know, have it a little tighter with mono, but as a general rule, it's about half as tight for me as when I'm casting.
Yeah, I would just add that you really don't want to be too tight. Obviously, one big problem that could happen there, you could leave a lure in a fish's mouth, which is really bad for everybody and going to make you mad, but I don't know exactly the amount, but I should be able to grab it and pull it out fairly easily, fairly steadily to me. I have not seen a case when I started trolling, I would generally run tighter than I do now, and I didn't feel like I was getting any better hook sets, and I also feel like I got a more violent reaction initially, right after the fish was hooked, if it was really, really tight, so there was no give at all, and the fish might come flying out of the water, throw the lure, this, that, and the other. I'd rather have them just start shaking their head at first and move out. But that's it.
Yeah, I mean, what I do, like you're saying, like loose, tight, whatever, I up my hooks, though. You know what I'm saying? So it's like if it's a small crank, I'm going heavier hook. So I can set it. I mean, it's just different ways to skin the cat, you know, so I'm not breaking them off because you will. If you overset the drag on a trolling pass, you'll bend them, you know, if you take like a lighter hook.
A lot of rod holders, too. You got to be really careful.
Fulbies.
I mean, you got your drag set too tight. I've seen some scary stuff happen with some of them plastic rod holders.
Zipping, yeah. That's one thing. You got to have a good rod holder because, I mean, that's something you spend money on.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Got another one here.
Hey, just one question. Given the results, I'm sure everybody's aware of the PMTT in Eagle River. What are you guys thinking about the Panoptics and LiveScope stuff, and how do you see this playing out in the future?
I will take that bullet right off the rip. I have it on my boat, my Red Lowe's sitting right over there, and I have Panoptics on the front. It is, I'm not going to get in the tournament aspect. We did that on the podcast, but the Bassmasters Classic, Randy Howe, who's on the pro staff with me, Herbie, and Pete, Randy Howe, who is fishing million-dollar tournaments, is going to use everything to his advantage he can get his hands on. That would be my thought. I don't think it's the ethics of it. I don't know. What do you guys? You guys are old school because I'm sure you heard the same thing about flashers. You know, I mean, Smitty was around before they even had boats. I don't. Was that cheap?
not that long.
I'm beating on you, but I had to get a laugh out of the room here. What do you guys think of like the evolution of electronics? What do you do? What do you do? Would you not use it? Would you use it? Let her rip. Why not?
I would say with regard to the tournament aspect of it, because it's so new, it's really one of those things that I guess if I was running a tournament now, I would probably say, all right, we're going to just to try and keep it even because everybody's paying money to get in. Let's just go 2D and side imaging, and that's where it ends at this point. Because it's just to a certain extent a fairness deal. I think that could possibly change if it really catches on and the majority of the people would have it. I guess that would make it more fair. But I think at this point it's probably a little out of the picture. As far as you know, you can't stop the technology end of it though. I don't know. You know if you don't use it, you're definitely at a disadvantage if everybody else is. I don't know how you get away from that.
I think I'm not a big bass tournament guy, but what is it, like Major League Fishing or one of those where they all have the same boat? I can't remember what tournament circuit. That's the only fair tournament there is. Everybody got the same boat, and you don't want to know what lake you're going to. And I can't remember what one that is. What do you got on deck, Jay Bird?
Christian.
So basically my question is, so say you're on like a really hot rubber bite where like you really have to set the hook hard with like rubber baits and that kind of stuff, like how do you train yourself to be able to set the hook really hard but then also for baits like top water and that kind of stuff, like train yourself to not completely ram the hooks every time? Like how do you get yourself to find that in between? Yeah. Exactly.
I'll go for it. So with the rubber, you know, I if I'm going to throw a big rubber, I will actually throw an extra heavy rod, right? Because I know I've got to move that the teeth through that rubber. He grabs onto that thing. He's holding on. I really need to move that bait and plant the hooks. So I'm not changing my hook set. I'm changing my rod for the appropriate bait. You know, you don't want to throw Booker is the master of that, where it's like, okay, I've got my whippy mid-heavy shallow raider rod, or I've got, you know, but you're not going to throw a glide raider on that. You're going to, a rod appropriate, like the right tool for the job, you'll get the mix, you'll get more consistent results, because I don't think, I mean, you want to turn your hips on a fish on rubber, wham, right? And then lift, but I don't think I'm putting more power in. It's just the right tool. What do you think, guys?
Well, I think the school of hard knocks kind of teaches you. You know, I mean, you know, when, like I tell people after they lose a really big fish, you know, try to remember what you did wrong, because what just happened, that feeling will get better, but not much. And that pretty much teaches you the hard way, you know what I mean? It, you know, experience is what teaches you. You can talk to yourself and tell yourself and try and reinforce you as you go through the day, and stuff like that. But sometimes it's like deer in the headlights when stuff hits the fan, you know what I mean? So it's kind of the school of hard knocks, you know?
Yeah, I think the only thing I would add to that, our young muskie friend over here, is you can almost walk away from the muskie game and just look at a great quarterback. You know, he has the touch on his ball. Well, it's like, hey, we're in Packer fans. I mean, they don't get any better than what we watch every week, every Sunday. Okay? The guy can throw a dart, okay? But you don't throw the dart at a running back when he's coming out of the backfield. You make it easy for him. And it's kind of the same concept, you know, with the different lures you use. We talked about it earlier about mastering your skills. As you change lures, Steve hit on it as changing rods. Rods, when you look at a rod, all these different rods, a selection of rods here, it doesn't say, oh, geez, light action, I catch smaller fish. Oh, extra heavy action, I catch bigger fish. No, those rods are set up like, they're like golf clubs. Those rods are set up for the different lures you're going to throw in different presentations. You can catch the same fish. You can catch a giant tarpon on a light fly rod. You know, you just got to hook them. But at the same time, if you're using the wrong rod, that's why, by the way, how many times I know everybody that's sitting up here, and Jay and the guys at the muskie shop got to deal with this all the time. Okay, I'm just getting into muskie fishing. Give me one rod, man. Then I can throw all this stuff with. It doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way. Then you can't take one golf club and do all those things. So, you know, the rod you choose will make a big difference. Steve hit on that. The rod you choose, you know, will make a big difference on the lures you're using. And if your hook set, you know, your hook set will be compensated for by the rod action. Does that make sense? So, you know, it's hard. There are variations in how you set the hook. And that goes with experience and skill. And like Mr. Herbeck was saying, you know, you're still going to lose some. You're going to lose them, and it hurts, especially those big ones hurt. But, you know, using the right tackle versus the lure you're using, the right tool for the job, so to speak. You know, you got to have the right tool. And when you use the right tools for the job, usually everything works better, but still, there's no guarantees that you're going to hook every one of these fish. You're just going to get better at it. And then one other thing, too, is you got to keep your hook sharp. You know, even in this day and age, it's amazing. Smitty hit on it on our last session about it's like you're looking at a box of some of these guys. They pull up and you look at, you know, they drop their stuff on the boat and you look and go, good grief. A few years ago, I took some of you that watched some of my older videos. There's an old football coach I used to fish with. You guys remember him, Coach Kramer? Coach Kramer had the worst treble hooks on his lures than anybody I've ever seen. And, you know, I was on the first fishing trip I went with him. He lost like five or six top rater strikes. And he, Joe, geez, you got to change these hooks. And I looked at him and go, exactly. I said, geez, Coach. I says, how long have you had the same treble hooks on that lure? Oh, I've caught all kinds of fish on there. And, you know, the barbs were bent. The thing was rusted, you know. There's no way he was going to catch any fish. As soon as I changed his hooks and sharpened them up, the next strike, he caught the fish. So it's little things like that sometimes that make a difference, too. It's like, you know, whether you're fishing with rubber or you're fishing with a little lure, make sure those hooks are sharp.
Got another question right over here.
How's it going? So I fish a lot of, like, gliders and dive and rise. And I was getting just, like, situations where I was getting a lot of follows up, like, a lot of just lazy, not interested kind of follows up to it. And I was kind of wondering if it was, like, after if I need to downsize further or that maybe they wanted it hotter. But it's, like, even if I tried that, it seemed like I wasn't getting follows after that. So if in a situation where you have, like, a hot, sunny day and you're getting a lot on gliders or dive and rise, like what direction you might go?
Boy, that's a horrible one. Just because there's no certain answer, you're probably doing the right thing. But I would definitely try and go crazier, you know, with the jerking, twitching, whatever you want to call it, pick up the pace. One thing with a glider, it depends on what type of bait you have, but in a lot of cases, you can get a glider jerk bait, at least maybe through rod angle up might be able to help. Once in a while, if you get it to break the surface, turn it into a topwater, once in a while, that will trigger things. But then about the only other thing I could think of is switching it up, trying another bait, too, that was really, you know, fast-moving, most likely try and get a reaction strike out of a bucktail or a real fast-moving paddle tail, something like that.
Yeah, well, my experience, and it happens a lot on a day like that, is it's a sunny, bright day, flat, calm. Fish see everything. They see you move. They see you do the figure eight and all the other stuff. And, you know, not all the muskies are going to bite. And in my boat, if that happens, I always tell my clients that fish is working for the Chamber of Commerce. That one's not going to bite. That one's just to show up to get you excited about muskie fishing. And a fishing guide always needs a suicide muskie once in a while. And that can happen, too, on a day like that. So it's not that you can't catch a fish that day, but when you get a Chamber of Commerce fish, they're pretty hard to catch. They are hard to catch.
That's a good one. The only thing I would add to that, and I think it's something that I know all these guys appear to agree with me on, is that gliders and jerkbaits in general bring those fish up that otherwise wouldn't follow. So I know Chaz and I talk about this a lot, that, you know, when we're really struggling to get just a spot fish, is put a glider on, and, oh, now we're getting follows. Now we're, you know, and all I do when I see one of those fish follow says, oh, gotcha, I know where you are now. I see you, you know. And I just file that stuff and go, I'm coming back to get you. And I'll get a lot of those big fish that follow gliders. Sometimes I'll catch them on the glider when the weather changes or whatever. But that's not always a bad thing, because now you know you're in the right spot. You know that you no longer are looking for one, or especially if you're looking for a big fish, you spotted him because he followed that lazy, followed that glider in. I know the first big one that Chaz caught with me on a glide raider, that fish followed it and followed that bait, and then finally weather conditions changed and he caught it. So we're talking about when fish don't follow, you put a glider on so that you get the follows, and then you come back on them. I always talk to them as soon as I see one of those, or when my friends is fishing and we see one, I go, I know where you are now, you know, and I'll come back on them. A lot of times catch those fish on something else, especially on a change of light.
Steve, how about you? He's coming up on a glider, moderate pace. What's the one thing you would do? Was it switch a lure, or is it tempo change?
I just think on glide baits, for me, it's a matter of, if I know he's coming in, I usually just start. I mean, it's distance from the boat, right? So the difference between 15 feet and 5 feet when he shows himself, if he's out and I see him, pick up the pace, bam, 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 get him going, get him juiced up. If he shows up sort of in that last, you know, 5 feet, I just dead stick it, just drop it down, and then it becomes a jig. So, you know, letting that bait fall, he didn't respond to the zigzag, but I got his attention, and I can usually pick those fish up on a dead stick, which is just literally engage the reel, let it fall down, which is a habit I picked up from you, which is anytime I'm coming into the last little bit, my figure eight, click the reel anyway, and it, you're already set up for that. You know, just let it fall, let it sink, pop, pop, pop. Yeah, you watch me catch a couple the other way. And so it's a nifty trick in that moment, but everything they're saying is correct, which is overarching, which is, okay, now I need to readdress. But in that moment, you have those two options, speed it up or drop it down. And like I said, you can eliminate a lot of that follow by adding that into the glide, because what happens with glide baits all the time, one of my favorite presents, pop, 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 all the way back to the boat. They're going, this is feeling, stealing from you always, Joe, but they're going, feeling good.
this is looking good. I'm working the bait. I got this thing. It's perfect. I know how to fish a glide bait, and it does one thing the entire time, which is if I land next to cover or structure, it's pop, 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 pulse. Pop, 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 pulse. Right. Don't try to turn a glide bait into a bucktail or a crankbait, but try to elicit that strike out there. But if you're stuck in that position, boat side, you're either too fast, too slow, or you need to throw something back on him.
Hey, we got one back here. You got a question?
How much muskies do you catch each day?
Good question. Good job, buddy.
Steve Herbeck, how many muskies do you catch a day?
Not enough.
Usually. Not enough. Yeah, not enough, I think is the... Not enough. You have one over there, Jay Bird.
And it started out with Russ earlier talking about keeping your hook sharp, good hook set. Then we got into rods and appropriate setting that. Taking a step back to the hooks, you look in the catalog and you see heavy, extra heavy, regular ones, wide gap, short shank. Is there any general advice on when I'm looking for a wide gap, short shank hook on a crankbait versus something else?
I'm not trying to jump, but Pete, you had the Mustad hooks. You work with them for a lot of times, and then Joe uses those of keeping fish pinned. And I think that's from experience, which is like the little crankbaits, what's that hook called where it insets like that? Oh, you got to keep these. Yeah, like there's these inset hooks and stuff, wide gap hooks. It's situational. I think it comes back to Herbeck, which is learning through pain. You know, you start changing hooks when you go, I'm losing fish, but this is what they're hitting. I don't know. What do you think, Joe or Pete? Or?
Well, if you got a smaller bait with multiple hooks, which gives you the best hooking percentage that there is, you know, what I try to do on any bait is try to make it the highest percentage. Muskies are a game of percentage in every single thing you do from starting to finish, and particularly with your baits. So what you want to do with a, let's say you got a crankbait or a jerkbait, and every 10th cast you got to unhook a fouled hook. That means you should probably go to a short shanked hook so that your hooks aren't fouling. You're keeping your bait high percentage. And I really like, rather than big 4X strong hooks, because I believe any time you straighten a hook, you got your drag or you're forcing the fish way too hard. Okay? Anytime you straighten a hook out. I like the new blackened hardened hooks are excellent, especially in the round hardened wire hooks. They are razor sharp, they're thin diameter, and they'll even hook right through the roof of a muskie's mouth, where the older, bigger diameter hooks in the past would really be just hanging on the points a lot of times. You get a fish in the net and you hear, hey, I see you held on to him just because of the pressure, and it wasn't even past the barb yet. Whereas these new short round bend, particularly hardened wire hooks and the chemically sharpened points, even without you sharpening them, which you should always do, they're razor sharp, they penetrate like needles, and then it's a matter of making sure that your hook is efficiently working on the bait that you're using it, so it doesn't foul, it doesn't get stuck on the side of the bait like on some wood baits. You'll need to use a wider gap hook so it doesn't hang up on the top edge of a bait or something. It's just watch your bait, make sure that you make the changes so that the bait is always running at its peak efficiency and hooking ability.
I would interject just one thing, though, which is like you go, because people are the podcast and ask, well, why do I need to change the hooks on a bait, right? Everybody up here has made baits at this point, but it's situational. So you might put the hooks on a baby shallow rater for situation A. It's not the wrong hook. It's the wrong application. You'll hear that a lot. Well, why do I need to change the hooks? Well, it's the application. It's not that they're chintzy hooks or the wrong hook or this, that. It's situational. So if you go, you know, I need to upsize, downsize, I need to put two heavy hooks on a bait. I did, and I love slammer baits and Joe's baits, and I do it a lot of times where I'll take three hooks off and put two heavier hooks on, you know, because I need maybe a better point, or I'm fishing really heavy rocks, or I need like hang time. So just observing what your bait's doing in the water, and then back to Herbeck, which is if you're losing fish, something's wrong, you need to change it up for your fishing style.
And the only thing I would add to that is, and it just really piggybacks to what he was talking about, is taking the same lure, changing the hooks on it for multiple situations. The situation sometimes demands what hook you have on your lure. This isn't always true, but on some lures, it's like critical. One of the classic examples on my product line is the 5-inch shallow reader. The 5-inch shallow reader comes with a 1/0 hook on it, 1/0 short shank hook. It's a floating, diving, work over shallow water, bump and rise kind of crankbait, jerkbait combo. Now, if I want a suspending shallow reader, instead of trying to add weights, stick on weights and all that, all I got to do is jump to a 3-0. And now all of a sudden that lure doesn't float. It either suspends or slowly sinks. And then if you go in between that, a 2-0. So in other words, what I'm saying is you can add or subtract. You can increase or decrease the buoyancy of the lure just by changing out the hooks on it. When you do that, you know, you decrease buoyancy or add buoyancy to your lure, depending upon what you want. Okay, once you start changing lures out from what the factory recommendations are for it, you got to realize too that you're altering the way the lure works. Okay, the other thing is like Steve was saying, as soon as you get, if you're having hook fouling problems, one of the easiest way to do to solve that problem when you're upsizing your hooks is to go to shorter shank hooks. And one of the things I do a lot is use extra short shank hooks, but large on small lures. So, for example, the 5-inch shallow reader, a lot of times I use it with a 3-0 extra short shank hook on it. Doesn't come that way. And I've had guys say, well, why don't you just market it that way? Well, then it's no longer a floating diving minnow bait, which is the way most people use it. So, you know, fishermen are just endless tinkerers. They'll do different things with lures for their situations. And I guarantee you that everybody up here has tinkered with a lure, sometimes drastically, to fit a situation the way they like to fish it.
I think we had a question here.
I'm just piggybacking on that young man's question about the rubber bait and the hook sets. Are those grips that are on the rods, do they help for the hook sets? Are they a hindrance, or doesn't it matter?
Like you're talking, it's got the bottom grip? My opinion is that's ergonomics. You know, I don't know. Do you guys fish the jig rip?
I really haven't. I don't have any experience with that at all.
I fish them.
Some people really love them. I happen to have a little bit of arthritis in my thumb joint, and I got a rod made with one because I thought it would help me, and it actually made an angle that wasn't comfortable for me. So, you know, I it just doesn't work for me, but I know a lot of people who absolutely love them. Yep. So it's what makes you feel comfortable, what allows you to fish the best you can fish with and the longest without fatigue. For me, I'm a pussy. My you know, when my thumb hurts, I can't stick with it all day. So
I would just add, you know, one thing that maybe didn't get talked about a bunch was just snap to a certain extent. To try and get snap to that hook set and plan that, practice it. I've seen in the guiding days, I've seen some of the biggest, strongest guys ever get, you know, pretty much ineffective hook sets because they simply just lean into it and let the rod load up. There's no snap involved. Really, I don't know if you concentrate with that a lot. It's especially important for like quick strike rigs as well, where you need to, you know, you need to break a rubber band or you need to break the system and pull that hook free. You definitely want to practice that. Yeah. You know, try and get that snap to the hook set rather than just loading up.
Creating speed.
Well, yeah. It comes from being engaged. I think like Booker's brought up like the guide thing. You're guiding. You're trying to keep people focused, right, and in tune and feel. You know, if you could, feel is hard to teach. And it's that we could sit up here and have a 14-hour power panel, and you couldn't teach how to read the water. You couldn't teach how to feel. And it's time on the water and experience, but being observant and paying attention. Because I think the one thing I see on hook sets is it's so fast and you respond. There's a delayed response. Boom, I think I got one, opposed to wham. You know, you're paying attention. You feel it in the rod. You know what that bait's doing. I think we all know what, you know what the bait's at. You know where it's at. You know what's going on with that bait. And when something feels different, that feels like a fish, you know, you don't necessarily need that huge load up to set the hook. You go, oh, there's one, you know. And I think it's like focused. I always tell people about, if your bait is wet, be paying attention. If you're losing focus, take a 5-minute break and come back to it, because I think a lot of fish get missed because they go, bam. And they're staring at a squirrel. Oh, that's a lovely squirrel. You know, why didn't we get one? Well, you're staring at that squirrel. It was very handsome, but nonetheless, had you been paying attention, you would have caught him.
Do we have any more questions, guys? Anybody? Uh-oh. Back here. Oh, boy. Okay.
While he's walking back there, I want to answer, this pistol grip things. None of us have really had a lot of experience with it. I noticed that rod manufacturers, including the major ones like St. Croix, now got a whole pile of those, a whole series of rods with those new grips on them. And I think Steve hit the nail on the head. It's an ergonomic thing. And it isn't for everybody. I'm going to try it for the first time this year just to see, because St. Croix came out with it on a whole series of rods. But be frank with you, I haven't had any of these ergonomic issues with that. I'm just getting old, so I know a little ibuprofen every once in a while just seems to be the best, and a good night's sleep seems to be the best thing for me.
For me, well, he's getting another question. It's you could ask the guys from Chaos have it too, and they have it built in their rods, and they can probably answer it better. But like, if I'm jigging Bondies a bunch, I'll feel it my bicep and go, man, this is killing me. But it, just the twist of the wrist, you're using a different muscle group in some capacity. You might find that works better. And then, like you were saying, what angle it's at, because if you got it and you're like this and you're trying to set this way, now you're not setting against the backbone of the rod, right? So you'd have to be somewhat.
I never tried one. I picked them up and looked at them, but they were for me.
With the flex of the rod, the map power opposed to the way this, it did the rod's going like this.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. Yeah, you got to be squared up. I mean, if you're making a cast, it's just like this doesn't. If this is the side of the boat and you're doing this, and he's out here, you're here. So it's Happy Gilmore. It's all in the hips. It's all in the hips. I mean, it is though. Every time, I've all these guys are hook setters. I mean, that for real. I mean, that's the one thing of like, if you boil it down to, and that's practice, and that's. Just feel. I mean, you can't articulate feel, but paying attention and going, that's not right, boom. Because sometimes they're pacing it. I always tell people on the boat, I say, hook sets are free. Don't be afraid to use them. You're not going to burn them up,
We got you.
Got a question here.
Post turnover, when water temp is uniform top to bottom, how do you guys go about figuring where you're going to start fishing? And what the tactic for the day is going to be.
Well, another kind of tough question. To be honest with you, it's a tough period, and it's just something you really have to pattern. The one thing that can be pretty solid that I probably don't try enough of is there will be a real shallow bite. Sometimes after everything mixes and but it's hard to pattern because the water temperature is the same top to bottom, not necessarily clarity, but whatever kind of mixing is done, it's probably throughout the system. So it's just strictly a patterning thing that I've seen. It can be way different on different lakes. If you've got really good edges, sharp breaks and regular breaks. That's something to always concentrate on and try. And then to a certain extent, it's, you know, avoid crappy situations if you can. We're normally able to, in an area like this in northern Wisconsin, to a certain extent, try and avoid anything right after post turnover. So in other words, you could, you know, you kind of target the smaller lake thing up until they turn over, and then you can switch over to big, deep, clear lakes to a certain extent. And in a lot of cases, the turnover period is literally a couple of weeks, sometimes even 3 weeks apart. And you just kind of play the game of trying to fish things in pre-turnover before you hit that and then jump. And then, of course, the other thing you can do is fish rivers. There's a lot of current. You know, you don't have nearly as much effect there.
I think it about wraps it up. Any more questions? One more question?
Can I help this guy out on one last suggestion? One of the things about this, are you talking about early post turnover? When things all of a sudden, when they just, lakes just turn over, or are you talking about later after, you're talking about that whole post turnover period? Oh, well, that, you know, that's completely different, really. I mean, when a lake first turns over, by the way, anybody out there that doesn't understand what a turnover is? Be honest. Y'all, man, what an educated audience. All right. Only one. For that one young man that raised his hand and was honest, we'll explain it. Basically, what we mean by turnover is your lake this time of the year, for example, is stratified. In other words, with warmest water being at the top. And as you, when you take a dive off the dock, you know, you all of a sudden you go down and it gets cooler and cooler. And all of a sudden you get to a point where all of a sudden there's this big temperature change. That's called the thermocline. And a lot of times below that thermocline, by midsummer, there's no oxygen. Or less oxygen. It is not as good an environment, so the fish stay above that thermocline level. With that being said, and that question being asked, one of the biggest things that happens is when the days get shortened, nights get colder, and that water starts to cool, is it eventually mixes, it sinks and mixes and eventually destroys a thermocline, and the water becomes more constant with both not only temperature but oxygen from zero to whatever the deepest water is in the lake. Okay, with all that being said, the biggest thing that happens during that time is once you take and open up that other realm of water to these fish, it has a tendency to distribute the fish to all parts of the lake. They are no longer restricted to be above that thermocline. And the behavior of the fish, the activity of the fish, varies a lot between, the reason I wanted to bring this up as we close this up is there's a big difference between early turnover when it first happens, and it has like a big storm roof shaking effect where it stops these fish from feeding, as a tendency to, because all of a sudden, you know, their home is disrupted. But then after there's a settling of it and there's no more turnover, and you're in post turnover, but now all of a sudden the fish become active again. Well, that's a whole different situation, and you get some of your best fishing of the year, and that, you know, that mid to late October into November is sometimes when you get your best fishing, because a lake has stabilized, it's past that early turnover stage. Okay, one last thing is the turnover varies a lot depending upon how your weather is in the fall and the size of the body of water.
You know, too, as far as looking where to fish during that time, you know, the old adage, the lake is turned over, the water temperature is the same, they can be anywhere they want to be, which is somewhat true. So usually at that time of the year, unless it's like really early in the morning, towards dark or after dark, and you got, you know, ciscos or whitefish moving up and the fish are really up, really shallow, most of the time I like to pick, you know, the steeper
closer contoured breaks part of the lakes and the bars and the points and stay out as absolutely far as I possibly can, yet still reach the edge so that I can cover whatever depth that I can. And then when I'm using live baits, I like to zigzag up into about 18, 16, out to 30. These fish can be anywhere, but I like, if I can be in 35 feet of water and still at the end of the cast, still hit 8 to 12, that's where I want to be, rather than be at 16 feet of water so that I can reach, you know, 5 to 8 feet of water. And usually the steeper breaks are where I first, you know, start on a lake. When you're in that post turnover time.
Okay, I think we have one last question here, and then we'll get to the grand prize. You have a question, sir?
We were out busky fishing a couple of days ago with live bait, using suckers. And a couple of times we were not getting, you could just, well, I'm blaming it on my brother. He bait poor hook sets, he wasn't getting a snap in the line. Or is there any suggestion as to how to get a secondary hook set if you know you don't get a, or you don't feel you got a good one the first time?
I usually try to lift up on the fish a little bit when you know he has the sucker. And if you lift up on him a little bit, what it causes the fish to do is to kind of start swimming away from the boat. And that way his mouth is facing that way. One of the worst things to do is to get right on top of the fish and your line is straight down. And when you tighten up your line to get the hook set, you're pulling the fish's head up like this. And you pull the sucker right out of his mouth. And so my tactic is always trying to get the fish a little bit away from the boat on an angle and get him swimming that way. And then when you sock it to him, he gets it in the corner of his mouth. And one thing about the high-tech line too, the super braid line, and it's happened in my boat more than once where I was coaching my client what to do and time to set the hook and so on. And when he reeled up, he put his rod down and he set as hard as he could. And you can break 80-pound test line like store string. So there's no stretch in that line. So what you want to do is make sure that when you set the hook, that you're pulling up on the fish a little bit, your line is tight to the fish, and then just set it hard and don't have a little slack in the line because you'll break 80-pound test line like nothing.
We're up here laughing about before there was super braid, and Herb Beck goes, hit him.
Well, even with super braids, as long as you're not snapping it like Smitty was saying, you know, it's my belief that a second or even third hook set, if somebody hasn't given a good hook set, yeah. If you're going to actually tear the hook out of a fish's mouth on a second hook set, you probably weren't going to get him at the boat anyway. So I've seen way more fish lost because a clip or a rubber band or a nose hook or whatever didn't break free and was never hooked to begin with. All they were doing was holding on to the sucker. And sometimes you even get lucky and get those in the net. But for most people, unless they're experienced, after they set the hook, I usually tell them to reel down, still staying tight to the fish, but hit them again. And more times than not, if you haven't broken a hook free, or you happen to turn a hook into the sucker by accident, or the clip or the band hasn't broke, you have a really good chance at finally hooking them, because that muskie is going to be trying to get rid of that bait. You know, it's going to want to try and shake its mouth and stuff, and a lot of times that second hook set will. And like I said, if you actually rip a hook out of a muskie's mouth on a second hook set, you probably weren't going to get him anyway.
Sweet. And I'll say this too, because you know, with live bait or seasonality of live bait, being careful. And if we're going to wrap it up here, just say one thing I make sure. Yeah, we're getting at that point. Pete loves to talk about the heat, and I'm with him. But if nothing else, I would leave everybody with just being careful. Make sure you have the right tools in the boat and put the fish first. you know, and just really spin, keep the head in the water. We were talking about this, me and Pete were talking about it earlier, because I get asked all the time, and it's not the most popular conversation, but make sure you got the right release tools, right? So you're keeping the head down. We're keeping the minimal impact on the fish, regardless of time of year. I know it sounds preachy, but, you know, and we've all been guilty of, and there's not a person up here that has not lost a fish, you know, hands down. But just to put that in everybody's mind of just being careful with the fish, especially when we get in the hotter water. Pete?
Yeah, just the, I mean, it's, like he said, it's not a popular topic, but the bottom line is we're very fortunate this year. In a lot of cases, we're in the upper 70s to maybe even 80 this time of the year in surface temps. And to me, that's, everything's arguable, but that's when you should be probably thinking about not even fishing for them at all, because it is, I'm not even going to try and talk science, biology, whatever, if it's lactic acid or whatever it is that causes things. But the bottom line is anybody that's fished these fish in cooler waters and warmer waters as well, if you take the exact same fight time and landing, handling time with a fish in 60-degree water and a fish in 78-degree water, it's like absolute night and day. So this is the time of the year when you're in the 70s that you really need to be extremely careful and very much so try and limit that time out of the water. When that head is out of the water, it doesn't matter what it's for. Doesn't matter if it's for taking a photo. Doesn't matter if it's trying to get the hooks out. If it's for measuring, whatever it is, it all adds up. So you absolutely want to avoid that. I had a little reminder here the other day. We caught a nice fish this past Thursday. And another, another professional, good buddy of mine, Rob Manthai, was in the boat and ended up trying to unhook the fish. Well, this fish was hooked heavily, and it was a tough one. So I bet you it took 25 to 30 seconds for him just to get that hook out of that fish. Well, this particular fin, it's the way it is, right? It was hard to get at with cutters and this, that, and the other. A lot of times the fish dictate that. But anyway, with all of us professionals out in the boat, did still hold it up for a quick picture. That fish did not go down for about a half hour in 75-degree water. That's the reality of it. Do I think it died? Probably not, because it didn't show any sign of hemorrhaging. It didn't show any signs of extreme stress. But it was definitely hurting. I will also say that I've seen quite a few lakes in my area, and I know from talking to a lot of other people, where we've seen a lot of summertime pressure. You know how lakes get hot for a while, and people target at certain times. Some of the lakes that have the least amount of density that were drastically changed from where they were 3-4 years before was summertime handling situations like that. It is always the time of the year you see muskies floating dead and other fish species. So I just always try and harp on it. None of us want to talk about it. It's not fun, but the reality is the single most important thing you can do besides everything else we talked about in order to catch more big fish is to make sure the fisheries are healthy. Yeah. And that means that release works. And I definitely always suggest this, a lousy topic too, but regardless of how you're using it, do not measure a fish in your boat during the warm water period. You're more apt to drop, and frankly, especially nothing against you newcomers, but if you don't have a whole lot of, you know, experience handling fish, I'll tell you what, everybody up here has dropped one, and you do not want to lose control of a fish in your boat. That's basically a, maybe not a big deal, 60 degrees, but it's a death sentence in 75 degrees, most likely.
Well, it just boils down to have a game plan and be safe, wouldn't you? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and the tools are important.
I love these big booker pliers. But anyway, Jay Bird. Jesse, you ready to give this thing away, baby?
Yeah, I want to get the tube screamer up here.
All right, here comes Jim Stewart. But guys, you know, regardless of
what is he
doing,
the tube screamer?
We call him the tube screamer. He's got his own color of Red October tubes now. They're awesome. But if nothing else, like what Pete's saying, just have a game plan for your stuff. Have the gear.
Here comes what they waited for, guys.
Here's what we're doing here. This is amazing. So the grand prize
Musky
is
fresh.
Trolling headlocks. Musky pressure. I wanna tighten. Musky pressure. Working jerk baits. Musky pressure. 360 podcast. Musky pressure. Burning bucktails. Musky pressure. Ripping rubber.